sights to show you.
I think we're okay.
It's Times New Roman. It's not.
That's Hitchcock.
I took it from the, I usually base the title art for every episode I write based off of the movie poster.
Okay, that's a good approach, actually.
Yeah, that's how I do it, anyway.
I just scroll through random and like, all right, that one works.
That one looks cool.
That one looks cool. That's kind of what I think about when I see the movie. Bam.
Yeah, I couldn't put, like, big-ass birds or anything.
But... just paste a picture of a bird.
I know. All right, you ready?
Yeah, fuck it, let's go.
Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Anthony Fuentes. How you doing today?
I'm okay. Yeah, today's a weird day.
It's Sunday.
Yeah, it's Sunday. It looks like highs and low lows. I don't know.
Just clusterfucks all around. But today, dear listeners, we are covering a movie that...
It's just one giant clusterfuck in the back hour, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Speaking of clusterfucks, yeah. Jesus Christ. We are talking about 1963's The Birds, of course, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. This movie really goes without...
Yeah.
It needs no introduction.
Really, like, if you don't know what The Birds is, like... This is like a film.
Yeah.
Well, we went back to the Wild with the Witch also, huh? Yeah. We're going highbrow this month.
Well, it's so funny. And
Unfriended, yeah.
Yeah, I know. We're going to talk about it, but The Birds was not well received.
No?
In the beginning.
Oh, in the beginning. So yeah. It's a slow, gradual build.
Over time, it had a slow burn into the famousness that we know and love today.
Interesting.
Everyone who has a fear of birds partially attributes it to The Birds.
Really?
I think.
It's like... odd special effect birds.
Well, I know. We'll talk about that too. But
But then 60s, people don't know any better. That's just terrifying.
Well, yeah. But no, like this kind of made the fear of birds kind of mainstream, kind of like how Jaws made the fear of sharks mainstream.
Interesting.
Because most people I know are just like, yeah, I watched The Birds when I was a kid and I was fucked for life.
Yeah, I know a few people that did that too, even exactly. Growing up.
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting... I don't know. I just think it's interesting because I want to know what life was like pre-birds.
I know. It's such an innocent time.
pre-the birds where like people were just like, ugh, birds are weird, but you know, whatever.
Pre-bloody ass fucking Tippi Hedren.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Just bust it out at the end. Oh
absolute
my gosh.
Chaos. But anyway, let's go ahead and dive right into it. A wealthy San Francisco socialite pursues a potential boyfriend to a small Northern California town that slowly takes a turn for the bizarre when birds of all kinds suddenly begin to attack people.
Okay, yeah, that's good because the first sentence is the first hour. And the second part of the sentence is the back part. It's really weird how it's like two movies to me.
Yeah, the spacing is very odd. Of course, this movie is 2 hours long, so get some snacks.
Yeah, definitely. Which is weird because I feel like I used to be able to watch 2 hour movies like nothing, but nowadays, man, my brain sucks.
I think it's just, you know, we're so used to having everything now quickly.
Yeah, and YouTube's giving us good content for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I'm the same way. Like, I used to tolerate 2 hour movies pretty okay.
Yeah.
But now anything longer than 90 minutes, I'm just like, ugh.
Wrap it up. What do you mean we haven't figured this mystery out yet?
Well, that was the other thing about The Birds is that there's no conclusion. It doesn't explain why the birds went ape shit. You're just, the birds are going ape shit. So it's,
that's interesting because it did feel like Psycho a little bit, where the first half of the movie is way different and then the second half is like another movie.
That could just be a Hitchcockian type of thing because he's also like big into like really non-traditional forms of film, like the whole pure film type thing.
Oh yeah, and so, plus his like editing styles again. He can switch it up pretty seamlessly.
And plus the birds for its time, the special effects were like super unorthodox.
Yeah.
So we'll get into
it. Well, for its time, not exclusive to that time, but yeah, let's get into it. Yeah, exactly.
So obviously it was directed by Alfred Hitchcock. It was produced by Alfred Hitchcock as well. The screenplay was by Evan Hunter. That's important. We're going to talk about it later.
Okay, cool name.
And it was based off of The Birds by Daphne du Maurier.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about that as well. For our cast, we have, of course, Tippi Hedren as Melanie Daniels, Rod Taylor as Mitchell Mitch Brenner, Jessica Tandy as Lydia Brenner, Suzanne Pleshette as Annie Hayworth, my favorite character, and Veronica Cartwright as Kathy Brenner. And this is our main principal cast for most of the film.
Dude, you can tell these are Hitchcock script right here. Yeah. This is a Hitchcock movie from these fucking names.
The cast is huge, technically, mm-hmm. and I wasn't. Yeah. We're not going to go through like
all the maimed bird children
specialist number one or anything. But yeah, this is our principal cast, and it was obviously distributed by Universal Pictures.
Yeah.
And it was released on March 28th, 1963.
Oh, cool. March movie. All right. Yeah.
It had a budget of $3.3 million, and it ended up making just under $11.5 million at $11.4 million.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. Good ROI right there.
Definitely. Yeah, it's. I'm surprised it made this much right off the get-go. Considering how it was received, it was kind of split.
But... Oh, which we're gonna totally find out soon.
Yeah, but first
we gotta figure out how it would got to the reception stage, obviously, and yes. That is with good old production.
Woo!
Yay! So the screenplay for the film is based off of. You're gonna have to get. I know I heard you say the name already, but Daphne du Maurier's novella The Birds, which was first published in her 1952 short story collection The Apple Tree. That's a really cool title, actually. All right.
Yeah.
The protagonist of the novella is a farmhand living in Cornwall, and the ending of the story is far more bleak than what we see in the adaptation some years later. Oh, that's weird.
Which is wild, considering that this does not exactly have a happy ending.
No, it's really, really glum. If you guys haven't seen The Birds, just don't expect to have a victory lap at the end.
No.
It's not that kind of movie. It was adapted by Evan Hunter, who had previously written for Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine and the television anthology series Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which we have mentioned quite a few times on here, actually.
Times, yeah.
But when you talk about, you know, writers that come from this era, yeah, a lot of them worked for Hitchcock. But the relationship between Hunter and Hitchcock during the creation of The Birds was documented by the writer in his 1997 autobiography, Me and Hitch. That's a cool one. That sounds like a rom-com.
Yeah, definitely.
Me and Hitch. Hitch is trying to get ladies.
Well, that's because there is a rom-com called Hitch.
Oh, there is one!
Yeah.
Yes, with Will Smith.
Yeah, that's where you're getting it from,
I think. Oh my gosh, dude. Who was the other guy?
I don't know.
Will Smith and...
You look at me like I watch rom-coms.
Right. Fuck, what's his name?
I don't know.
He's in Adam Sandler movies.
I don't know.
This is going to bug the shit out of me. Anyways,
He's like a staple in Adam Sandler movies?
Yeah, he was...
All I'm thinking of
Paul Blart.
Oh, okay.
He was Paul Blart.
I have no idea.
Ah, fucking A. All right, listeners, you're probably going to hate me because he is a very well-known actor. Anyways, Me and Hitch contains a variety of correspondence between the writer, director, and Hitchcock's assistant. And if you know anything about Hollywood, these assistants are the gatekeepers right here. So, yeah. Hunter began working on the screenplay in September of 1961. He and Hitchcock developed the story, suggesting foundations such as the townspeople having a guilty secret to hide, and the birds, an instrument of punishment, which, there is some very biblical kind of feelings when it comes to the way this movie plays out.
Pay no mind to the man who's screaming Bible verses and that it's the end of the world. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's a little on the nose.
That's a little on the nose.
But other than that, yeah.
But like the plague aspect, it kind of has that edge to it too, for sure. But he suggested that the film begin using some elements borrowed from the screwball comedy genre, then have it evolve into a quote stark terror. Okay, I can definitely see that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I mean, screwball comedies aren't like a common thing anymore, but like, yeah, I can see a little bit of those early 60s elements there. This appealed to Hitchcock greatly because it conformed to his love of suspense.
Which, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's like, oh, I can dick people around a little further. Yes,
love it.
The title and the publicity would have already informed the audience that birds attack, but they do not know when. The initial humor followed by horror would turn the suspense into shock.
So this actually worked for me pretty effectively, because the whole time, like literally from minute five, I was like, okay, when are the birds gonna start attacking people? Like, let's get on with it.
Like, Hitchcock knows what people are expecting. See, he's really good about that. Yeah, me, I have seen this movie here and there. So it was one of those things where I know the birds attack, but I know it's further in than I want it to. So I'm always just like, fucking come on, man. I don't care if this guy's like just slaying these women and fucking, it's weird.
Yeah.
At first, Hunter wanted the protagonist to be a school teacher, but this ended up being the basis for Annie Hayward's character instead. Hunter organized his scripts by shots instead of scenes, although this did not affect the final film.
I think it's just an organizational thing that he did different.
Yeah, I mean, if it helps him get into the creative flow, then yeah. I mean, you can't tell Hitchcock how to shoot a film. He'd be like, no, I'm going to actually use this angle. Fuck that. I'm Alfred Hitchcock. Please.
I do what I want.
Yeah, but the story's cool. So, yeah. So they wrote the first draft, and Hitchcock asked for revisions from several people once they're done with it. Consolidating their criticisms, Hitchcock suggested to Hunter that the script, particularly the first part, was too long.
It was longer than what we saw.
That is weird. Is it like a whole other movie and then like, we need a third act, put these birds in there.
I have no idea.
Well, he also thought it contains insufficient characterization in the two leads. With that long an opening? whatevs. And that some of the scenes lack drama and audience interest. Wow. Hitchcock would just laying it down. Like, I'm not using these shots. Your characters have no weight to them. What's all this bullshit? Where are the birds?
Yeah. It sucks. It gets worse.
Oh my god. As they made more edits to the draft, Hitchcock consulted with his friends, Hume Cronin, whose wife, Jessica Tandy, was playing Lydia, and V.S. Pritchett, who both tore the script to shreds. Damn. This is something that Hunter struggled with since there were so many changes. Dude, he barely got the credit for this shit. God damn.
You're right.
Oh my god. Good old... See? Hollywood bullshit, it goes back.
It always is, you know, churning.
Yeah, exactly. It's churning. I like that. There you go. Hitchcock also cut the last 10 pages of the screenplay, although some sources say possibly more, in order to create a more ambiguous ending. Wow, we always come across these, like, aims at ambiguity here.
Yeah.
I think it kind of works for this one a little bit. It's just very bleak.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Originally, he wanted the film to end without a The End card, but he was forced to include one before the film's full release. Actually, I don't know how that would have worked out.
Well, here's the thing, and I put a little note here. There wasn't an ending title card in the version I watched. There was nothing that said the end. It just faded to black.
I think mine had an end card.
Mine didn't.
Huh. Oh, well, whatever, Stars. If you're watching on Stars, they got the end card.
Yeah. If you rented it from Amazon, they didn't have the end card.
You're watching Alfred Hitchcock's Vision. That's what you're watching on Amazon. Stars is like, this is the version that we can actually purchase affordably.
No, I didn't have an end card on mine. Like, I went back and I looked for it, because I was just like, where the fuck?
Can I see a screenshot online? What the fuck's going on?
Yeah. I thought, it's so funny, because I also spent the whole movie thinking, like, I'm like, did I watch the wrong version? Like, is this, like, I was really concerned, and I was like, no, okay.
You're like, am I getting a director's cut of a fucking Hitchcock movie?
Wow. Somehow.
Yeah. Amazon would be the place to do that, though. Yeah. They would have, like, three different fucking versions of this shit. Anyways, now the special effects were cutting edge for the time. So much so that there was a portion of the budget specifically for the birds themselves. And this is pre-Star Wars, so special effects budgets, I'm assuming, are much more harder to, like, justify.
In the 60s, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. The majority of the birds seen in the film are real, although it is estimated that more than $200,000 was spent on the creation of mechanical birds for the film. Damn, in like 1960s money.
You're looking at a $3 million budget.
Oh, wow. That's right. That's like fucking 10 times more than John Carpenter got for Halloween.
Exactly. So you're like the amount, and then also, the $200,000 was just for the mechanical birds. You're not even looking at the special effects that they did later.
Yeah.
To, like, make everything come together.
Damn. Yeah. And then the real birds, the shit budget to clean that up.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ray Berwick was in charge of the live birds using the production, training and catching many of them himself. Badass. The gulls were caught in the San Francisco garbage dump, and the sparrows were caught by John Bud Cardos. Okay, John Bud. however, the captured sparrows had to be used alongside birds from pet shops to achieve the full effect in the scene where they invade the house, which is a pretty gnarly scene, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, this all the bird attacks are pretty good, but again, we'll go further into that.
The birds are my favorite character.
Yeah. It's funny. Once the crow attack and attic scene... Once the crow attack and attic scenes were assembled by the film's editor, George Tomasini, they were sent to the special effects department for enhancement. The film required tons of special effects, and Hitchcock commissioned the help of various studios in order to help the film accomplish his vision, which is, man, he was just the man, dude. He gave no fucks. Yeah.
Like, we're going to go through some of the studios that he contracted some work for the birds out to, and it's like four or five of them. Like, damn, dude. He did not fuck around.
He's like... He's doing the Michael Bay format right before. But the special effects shots of the attacking birds were completed at Walt Disney Studios by animator technician Iwerks, who used the sodium vapor process, the yellow screen process, which he helped to develop.
He went to the guy who created this process and was like, this is the shit I need, and you're going to help me with it.
Like, nobody does it that great. You're the one who pioneered this bitch. Pioneer it better, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sodium vapor process.
Oh, yeah. Right. The sodium vapor process results in very precise matte shots compared to blue screen special effects. Necessary due to, quote, fringing of the image from the bird's rapid wing flapping in the movie. Plus, it just looks so much more menacing. Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, right.
The birds do have, like, a very threatening, like...
Yeah.
Kind of presence to them.
I don't think it was mentioned in here, but also they use this, like, kind of digital sound device thing, and the sound was fucking annoying, first of all.
I had to turn it down sometimes. Yeah, I did.
I was like, I need a break. Mm-hmm. So I can totally understand a lot of anxiety coming from the use of the squawking.
Oh my god, seeing it in the theater too? That'd be fucking weird.
Yeah.
Oh well. Free to cinema at some point, I'm sure. At Disney, Iwerks worked on the following scenes. The children's party, Melanie driving to Bodega Bay, and the first two cuts of the crow attack sequence. One of the biggest challenges facing Iwerks was the scene where a number of sparrows fly in through the chimney of the family home, which I thought was a pretty good effect, actually.
Yeah.
Utilizing an optical printer, his superposition of a group of small birds flying inside an enclosed glass booth made it possible to multiply the birds in the living room. That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
That's very smart. Okay, cool. Dude, they had to really, like, be ingenious with the way they did these special effects. Like, superimposition's fucking hard. Most of the special effects work done at Disney was completed in the process lab on Printer 10, which was made from Iwerks' own original design. Damn.
Yeah, that wasn't, like, super important. I just wanted to include it because it's just, like, he is, like, hot shit.
Dude, this is reminding me so much of the production of The Thing, where Carpenter was, like, on top of his fucking game and can get whatever he wants. And was using cuddling against special effects like this. This is the same stage in their careers, honestly.
Right before
it all goes down, yeah. At MGM, Bob Hogue was put in charge of the optical effects for the sequence where Melanie hides inside a telephone booth and is attacked by the birds. Iconic fucking scene right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hitchcock had requested that Hogue remove any shot where Melanie looked placid and urged that she be in constant movement instead.
Good choice, because like, I remember specifically thinking about her movement in the, in the booth in that scene, and it just, like, making me anxious.
So. Well, that, and I remember, like... There's been a lot of parodies of that scene, and they all try to copy the camera work and that movement.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost one-to-one how many people try to copy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of iconic for that scene.
It is.
So.
It's up there with the shower scene a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Hogue, along with a team of 30, worked together on the blue backing and sodium matte shots. Damn, dude, filmmaking was very, very... like, hardware-driven back in the day.
Yeah, so much of this has to be practical.
It does,
because it's the 60s, you know?
That's true. Yeah, no CG there. They're barely sending those messages between, like, Navy computers.
Yeah.
Linwood Dunn, a founder of Film Effects of Hollywood, was commissioned to work on the attic scene. He was asked to produce a rough cut of the sequence before Hitchcock left for Berlin in December of 1962. Damn, he really did get a lot of fucking studios.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, wow. Bill Abbott at Fox was in charge of the optical effects for the Crow attack sequence, which would take 6 weeks to finish. Like, a full shooting schedule right there, damn. Abbott organized two teams, both working 11 hours a day, to work on the sequence simultaneously. Abbott's biggest challenge was size ratio, as he had to ensure that the birds looked like they were attacking the children. Wait, so what do you mean? Like, he just, like, they were realistic size taking on the kids?
So basically, they had, like, the ratio between the mats, because basically what most of the film incorporated, like, why the birds look the way they do, is because they just did, they shot two different reels and, like, put them on top of each other, mats.
Exactly.
And so they had to make it sure that the ratio was correct, so the birds, like, you kind of see it when what's her face, the main character, is sitting outside of the school and the
the playground shit.
When you start to see the birds landing in the playground, you can tell that the bird is technically too big for the play structure because it's too close up.
So they had it's to a make, scale
it's
thing
it's a scale thing
that
yeah.
makes sense. Okay, cool, see, more you know. This is very educational. Hell yeah. All right, cool. So at Universal, associate editor Ross Hoffman. These old fucking Hollywood names, man. Jeez.
Well, again, we're at like five studios.
We're at like prime Hollywood white dude era right here. So Universal, associate editor Ross Hoffman and matte artist Albert Whitlock. Almost Dick Warlock, almost. Both worked on designing the town's backdrop, including the birds in the trees and the scenery for the river shots of Melanie's car arriving in Bodega Bay. I gotta say, these exterior shots are badass. Like, they were really fucking good. So.
Well, I mean, this matte artist, like, is, like, super well-known, especially for Universal, like, movies. Really? So, well, yeah, nice. Read the next sentence.
Okay. He's also responsible for the aerial shot of Bodega Bay on fire where the seagulls attack. Damn.
Because that mat is insane.
That, yeah.
Well, the detail is completely unreal because they filmed that in a parking lot.
What the shit?
Yeah.
Dude.
They filmed that in a parking lot and everything else was a mat.
And it's like.
That they added. Yeah.
It's such an iconic scene. Damn.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay.
I learned that if you go to the special effects show at Universal Studios.
Way to go, Whitlock. Way to go. And Universal for preserving that knowledge for us.
Yeah. Damn. So, but yeah, that scene in particular is like one of those like quintessential examples of like using a mat and what
Dude.
It does. Yeah.
And it was shot in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Fucking A. Oh, anyways. And with that, the birds was ready to shock and terrify moviegoers all over the country. Now, did it, though? How'd it happen? What happened?
Yeah, so the film premiered on March 28th, 1963 in New York City. The Museum of Modern Art hosted an invitation-only screening as a part of a 50-film retrospective of Hitchcock's film work. The MoMA series had a booklet with a monograph on the director written by Peter
Bogdanovich.
It was a big fancy deal. Like, they did a whole fucking series on him. So
Peter Bogo, there we go.
Yeah, right.
That's a celebration though, right there.
Yeah,
that's a big celebration.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
At MoMA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the film was screened out of competition in May at the prestigious invitational showing of the 1963
Cannes
Film Festival, with Hitchcock and Hedren in attendance. The Birds actually was the opening film for that festival.
Damn, dude. Hitchcock was riding high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first one it opened with. Now, there really isn't much available about how it performed in theaters, like opening weekend, or how long it was even in theaters for, because it was the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But we know it made just under $11.5 million in the entire time it was in theaters.
I mean, for the budget, I guess that's pretty good. But
oh, yeah.
I know Psycho was bigger for sure.
Definitely, yeah. The Birds also received mixed reviews upon its initial release, and we will get into it now.
Ooh.
Bosley Crowther of the New York Times.
We've mentioned him before, haven't we?
Maybe, I don't know. It was positive, calling it, quote, a horror film that should raise the hackles on the most courageous and put goose pimples on the toughest hide.
This is fucking 60s way of just presenting that information. It's awesome.
Yeah. Crowther was unsure whether the birds were meant to be an allegory because, quote, it isn't in Mr. Hitchcock's style to inject allegorical meanings or social significance in his films, unquote. But he suggested that they could represent the furies of Greek mythology who pursue the wicked upon the earth.
Interesting. So. Yeah, I was actually listening to an interview with Hitchcock, and he basically said the same shit. He's like, my films are all fantasy films because they're just high in scale.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, don't go looking too hard.
Well, we'll get into that too. Philip K. Schuer of the Los Angeles Times was among the critics who panned the film, writing that, quote, Hitchcock was widely quoted as saying he hated actors. After his 1960 Psycho and now The Birds, it must be fairly obvious that he has extended his abhorrence to the whole human race.
Jesus.
For reasons hardly justified either dramatically or aesthetically, the old master has become a master of the perverse. He has gone all out for shock's sake, and it is too bad.
What a bitch. Wow, he's mad.
Yeah, he's big mad.
Oh my god.
So, it is also the only Hitchcock movie to have been featured in Mad Magazine.
Huh.
In issue 82 for The Birds from October of 1963.
Damn.
In the Mad spoof, it is, quote, revealed that the birds are controlled by Burt Lancaster as revenge for his not having won an Academy Award that year for his starring role in Birdman of Alcatraz.
Oh, Mad Magazine was the shit.
That is hilarious.
Oh.
And then the film was first broadcast on NBC television on January 6th, 1968, and became the most watched film on television, surpassing The Bridge on the River Kwai with a Nielsen rating of 38.9 and an audience share of 59.
39%?
Yeah.
Of people watch The Birds?
Yeah.
Damn.
The record was beaten in 1972 by Love Story.
What the fuck is a Love Story?
I don't know what that is. It's a 70s, like, romantic drama. It's supposed to be really sad, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, whatever. People remember The Birds, so okay.
I know. So, with the passage of time, the film's standing among critics has improved. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an approval rating of 96% based on reviews from 52 critics.
Fuck it, eh?
With an average rating of 8.2 out of 10. And the website's consensus states, quote, proving once again that buildup is key to suspense, Hitchcock successfully turned birds into some of the most terrifying villains in horror history.
It's so weird to see what these things panned early and then check the tomato score and it's in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, over time and definitely, I think, posthumously, people kind of lifted up The Birds a little bit more. And, you know, whether or not it should have been, we'll get into it.
Exactly.
On Metacritic, it has a score of 87%, or 87 out of 100,
damn,
based on the reviews from 12 critics, okay, indicating, quote, universal acclaim. Film critic David Thompson refers to it as Hitchcock's, quote, last unflawed film.
Dave Thompson, you idiot. No, but unflawed. I would say last of the classic Hitchcock, maybe.
I mean, Marnie comes after this, so we'll see.
Okay.
On Letterboxd, the film has a 3.8 out of 5 star rating out of nearly 200 reviews. Here are some of my favorites. Yeah. Letterboxd user Maria said, the OG Angry Birds movie. User Adrian Balboa said, man, fuck this movie and fuck those rancid ass sky birds.
sky rats.
All birds should be given capital punishment.
Oh, dude. Calm your shit, Balboa.
I know. And then user Cinema Clown, who I'm pretty sure we've quoted before on the show, ties it all together a little bit more eloquently. A remarkable specimen of suspense and horror, a marvel of technical filmmaking, and a perfect demonstration of how clueless and unprepared we are against the forces of nature. Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds remains one of the most underappreciated works in cinema history and amongst my top three favorite films of this genius filmmaker. Unquote.
Damn. Okay, so I think our critic fallback is always going to have to be...
Cinema Clown?
Roger Ebert's, Ryan Hollinger, and Letterboxd user Cinema Clown.
Yeah.
those are our three, no matter what episode we're putting them in here.
I'm pretty sure one of the first times we used Letterboxd, we definitely used
Cinema
one of
Clown.
His. Yeah.
Oh my god. No, let's verify an old scripts, and it's going to be a thing now. This guy's awesome. Maybe Maria, too.
OG Angry Birds.
All right. But, you know, that's obviously the release and reception right there. But there were some controversies going into... Or coming out from this movie, actually.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
These are all new to me, so let's break them down.
Yeah, so Anthony, I may break his heart today. We'll see.
Oh, let's see. So there was controversy in relation to the nature of Alfred Hitchcock and Tippi Hedren's relationship during the filming of The Birds. Hedger maintained that there were several incidents where Hitchcock acted inappropriately towards her. No.
Oh, yeah.
The cast and crew described his behavior as, quote, obsessive, and Hedren said that he, quote, suddenly grabbed me and put his hands on me. It was sexual. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah,
master suspense here. This is a different time, man. Well, no, it's not, actually. Fuck, it's Hollywood. Anyways, Hedren stated that she rejected Hitchcock's advances on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
Following this supposed rejection, Hedren was injured during the filming of the phone booth attack scene and consequently suffered cuts to her face from a pane of glass shattering on her. Ooh, that's gonna fucking suck.
Yeah.
Further, she insisted that she was misled about the logistics of the final attack sequence, where mechanical birds were replaced with real ones at the last minute. That's a dick move.
Yeah.
Ooh, it has been suggested that, quote, Hitchcock's deliberate inflicting of injury was revenge for Hedren's spurning of his advances. Oof.
Yeah, they thought it was retaliation.
Petty ass right there, yeah. Dude. Oh, man. Well, I mean, if we're going to cover films in the 60s, there's always a lot of that post-Mad Men bullshit happening.
Right, and also, like, I can't not put this in here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I actually saw a YouTube video, because I was looking at bird stuff.
Yeah.
Where Hedren actually, the title of it was, like, Hedren says Hitchcock ruined my life.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and this next sentence will explain why.
Okay, cool. Let's see. Yay. Hitchcock also signed Hedren to a 7-year contract, which he stated restricted her ability to work.
This was before he came on to her also.
Damn. These allegations were not brought to light until after Hitchcock's death. Although they had never been confirmed, they have widely been reported, including by Hedren's co-star, Rod Taylor. Despite this, some have publicly named Hedren a, quote, liar and fanaticist.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, things don't change, huh?
Nothing
has
changed.
They just don't change.
Yeah.
The controversy of this relationship is explored in the 2012 HBO BBC film, The Girl. The Girl being a direct nod to Hitchcock's treatment of Hedren after she rebuffed him, as he refused to call her by her name and only called her The Girl. What a dick. Ugh.
Yeah, he went, like, full, like, dickhead mode.
He went pet... And this is, again, he's, like, getting everything he wants in terms of special effects, and, like, he's on top of his shit, mm-hmm. So obviously he feels invincible. So
yeah.
So he's like, this is the thing he can't get? Yeah, makes total fucking sense. Hedren would go on to star in Hitchcock's next film, Marnie, due to her exclusive 7-year contract with Hitchcock. And maybe one day we'll cover it, but goddamn, it's dark.
Well, it's super, like, rapey. Like, there's, like, a super intense rape scene. And Hitchcock, like, basically says that he wants the camera on her at all times during the rape scene.
Jeez.
Like, he's a, yeah.
Going off the rails there, man.
Yeah, super intense. It's also a really early film for Sean Connery.
Okay.
He's the co-star.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll cover it one day when we...
really feel like being sad.
Yeah, when we really feel like being sad.
Well,
there
like,
you
even
go.
Just, like, if you read the synopsis and, like, kind of, like, the plot, because that's what I did, I was just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Oh, my
but
God.
But we'll get into it.
Yeah. Okay, so, supposedly... supposedly, Daphne du Maurier? Maurier? Maurier. Hated the adaptation of her story as Hitchcock moved the location from a farm in England to a sleepy beach community in Northern California.
Yeah.
We've covered quite a bit of Northern California communities so far, huh?
Oh, yeah, the past month or so. It's
yeah.
been a couple.
Actress Melanie Griffith, daughter of Tippi Hedren, claims that Hitchcock's abuse extended to her when he played a prank by gifting 6-year-old Melanie with a wax figure of her mother and a miniature coffin. What the shit?
Yeah.
Oh, this got a really sharp turn there, huh?
Yeah. And like I said, I think it would be negligent to at least not bring it
no,
up.
No, no,
yeah.
we need to put this stuff out there. We cover shit like the Twilight Zone incident and the movie we're going to cover in January. You're going to have to cover some dark Hollywood history.
Definitely,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's super fucked up. But, yeah, when I read this, I was just like, ugh. Well, and I think also it kind of goes to show, you kind of notice it when you watch Hitchcock's other films. He doesn't exactly have a fond view of women anyway.
No, he doesn't.
Like, he's not particularly, like, you know.
Oh,
so
I was actually reading watching a video analysis of The Birds that it was very much pointed, like, yeah, this is not a...
This is not a feminist movie.
It's not a feminist take on relationships among women at all.
No.
No.
Although, I would argue that Melanie, mm-hmm. her character, very feminist character.
Yeah, she's really, really assertive.
Yeah, well, and also she's just, like, this fun little, like, she just plays pranks and, like,
she's very independent.
Yeah, you don't see that in a lot of, like, 60s movies, or at least I would assume you don't, because I don't watch a whole lot of 60s film.
But then also, like, considering the ending, that's probably Hitchcock being like, see what happens when you speak up?
Right? Yeah. See what happens when you flirt with a man?
Yeah. Tarnish your reputation? Yeah. Oh, my God, the 60s. Anyway. Yeah.
So let's get into the legacy and some themes of the film. The film was honored by the American Film Institute as the 7th greatest thriller in American cinema.
Right behind Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah. Which also controversial. Is
it? We'll have to do a mini episode one day on Michael Jackson's Thriller. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. The music video?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. It's got zombies. We're good.
Yeah. Iwerks was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Special Effects. The winner that year, however, went to Cleopatra.
Interesting.
Tippi Hedren received the Golden Globe Award for New Star of the Year Actress in 1964, sharing it with Ursula Andress and Elke Sommer. Okay.
Never reading that name again.
She also received the Photoplay Award as Most Promising Newcomer. The film ranked number one of the top 10 foreign films selected by the Bengal Films Journalist Association Awards.
Huh.
Yeah. Hitchcock also received the Association's Director Award for the film, despite the film only making $30,000 overseas.
Had some fans, I guess. Shit. That's weird.
Yeah. It did not do well overseas. It also won the Horror Hall of Fame Award in 1991.
Okay, that's kind of late, but
late in the game, but also I've never heard of the Horror Hall of Fame before, so
better have Michael Myers in that bitch.
And then moving on to some themes, humanities scholar Camille Pagula wrote a monograph about the film for the BFI Film Classic Series. She interprets it as an ode to the many facets of female sexuality and, by extension, nature itself. She notes that women play pivotal roles in it, and Mitch is defined by his relationship with his mother, sister, and ex-lover, a careful balance which is disrupted by his attraction to Melanie.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with it, but...
Yeah, I don't know about that either. It kind of seems anti-women a little bit sometimes.
Among the central themes explored in The Birds are those of love and violence, and the representation of the birds in the film constantly change to reflect the development of these themes and the story itself. The bird symbolism shifts from a whimsical symbol of love to something far more menacing once Melanie enters Bodega Bay, from the lovebirds and then the seagulls and crows. So
interesting.
Yeah. However, Hitchcock stated in an interview that the birds in the film rise up against humans to punish them for taking nature for granted. So who the fuck knows? Like,
again, Hitchcock is usually pretty simple with his themes.
He's kind of what you see is what you get.
Yeah. But then again, considering like all the underlying bullshit that we just read about right now, he could be subliminally putting shit in there. He's not even realizing.
Yeah. Who knows?
Who the fuck knows? Yeah. Anyways. This is probably going to be one of the later, last Hitchcock's films we'll cover, so let's take a little look. It would be weird to listen to Psycho and then to this, because you'll see a big jump in the podcast quality, but but let's see how Hitchcock lived his later years. So The Birds is one of Hitchcock's last films. He went on to direct Marnie in 1964, Torn Curtain in 1966, Topaz in 1969, Frenzy in 1972, and finally, Family Plot in 1976. He got a little lazier with the names. None of these are really horror films, though. And none of them met with the critical or cultural success that The Birds did. So let's discuss the end. The end of Hitchcock. Failing health reduced Hitchcock's output during the last two decades of his life. Biographer Stephen Rebello claimed Universal forced two movies on him. It was Torn Curtain and Topaz.
Yeah.
Hitchcock.
So are you saying it like Topaz like that? Is that how it's supposed to be said, or is it Topaz?
I have no idea. I just say Topaz because there was somebody in my high school was named topaz.
Okay, so topaz is a gem.
Yes.
So I just wasn't sure. Okay. I was just curious.
I could just be wrong.
I know. I was just like, are you doing likely. This intentionally? Like, do you know something I don't, which isn't uncommon?
No. I think I'm just fucking up. Okay. Anyways, Hitchcock returned to Britain to make Frenzy in 1972, based on the novel Goodbye Piccadilly.
Farewell Leicester Square.
From 1966. That's okay.
It's British.
Frenzy's better. After the two previous films being espionage films, the film marked a return to the murder thriller genre. In Frenzy, Hitchcock allowed nudity for the first time. Two scenes show naked women, one of whom is being raped and strangled. Spoto called the latter, quote, one of the most repellent examples of a detailed murder in the history of film. Damn. Both actors, Barbara Lee Hunt and Anna Macy, refused to do the scenes, so models were used instead. Fuck.
Yeah.
He was having a really dark phase towards the end of his life and career here, huh?
Yeah.
Dude. Okay, so biographers have noted that Hitchcock had always pushed the limits of film censorship, often managing to fool Joseph Breen, the longtime head of Hollywood's motion picture production code. Many times, Hitchcock slipped in subtle hints of improprieties forbidden by censorship until the mid-60s.
Kind of, sort of, if you squint. Yeah. There was this also this other thing that I found where Joseph Breen was just like, I definitely knew. He wasn't being subtle. I just found it amusing, so I let it go.
Interesting. That could also be covering his ass, too. Who the fuck knows? Again, Hollywood egos.
I know.
Yeah.
But also, I think I said this in Psycho. And I'll say it again here. Fuck the Hays Code.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit.
Seriously. Anyways, The Family Plot. Family Plot, 1976, was actually Hitchcock's last film. While Family Plot was based on the Victor Canning novel, The Rainbird Pattern, much better name,
mm-hmm.
The novel's tone is more sinister. He lightened these things up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. Screenwriter Ernest Lehman originally wrote the film with a dark tone, but was pushed to a lighter, more comical tone by Hitchcock. It also stars Karen Black. Please go listen to us talk about how much we fucking love Karen Black and a little thing about a Zuni in a suit in our Trilogy of Terror episode, which needs more listens. But yeah. I love that visual.
Oh, yeah.
Towards the end of his life, Hitchcock was working on the script for a spy thriller, The Short Night, collaborating with James Costigan, Ernest Lehman, and David Freeman. Despite the preliminary work, it was never filmed, actually. Hitchcock's health was declining, and he was worried about his wife, who had actually suffered a stroke. So, goddamn.
Yeah.
The screenplay was eventually published in Freeman's book, The Last Days of Alfred Hitchcock, in 1999. Huh. I wonder what the reception is for that one.
I have no idea.
I can Google later. We have all the information in the world at our fingertips. His last public appearance was on March 16th, 1980, when he introduced the next year's winner of the American Film Institute Award. He died of kidney failure the following month on April 29th, 1980, in his Bel Air home. He was cremated, and his family spread his ashes over the Pacific Ocean. Damn, Britt Hitchcock became a Bel Air motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Old Hollywood, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Alfred Hitchcock Collection is housed at the Academy Film Archive in Hollywood, California. Not that far from here.
No.
It includes home movies, 16mm film shot on the set of Blackmail from 1929, and Frenzy in 1972, big gap, and the earliest known color footage of Hitchcock. The Academy Film Archive preserves many of his movies. The Alfred Hitchcock Papers is housed at the Academy's, what is it?
Margaret Herrick
Library.
Yeah.
So if you're in California, yeah, mm-hmm. there's a lot of resources here for your Hitchcock knowledge.
Yeah, all the old Hollywood stuff. So.
Yeah, but man, what a dark way to just go out.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Okay, yeah. But that's it, guys. Yeah, that's how Hitchcock rolled. Now we're gonna talk a little bit about this film because it is the last of our Hitchcock, and yeah, wow, what a dark tone to come off of. Interesting.
I know, I didn't know how to liven it up at the end, but there was not much I could do.
It's pretty bleak, like this movie, huh?
Yeah, right?
This is kind of like it was like The Birds, actually.
Yeah.
That's a fun narrative.
Jeez.
Oh, matte paintings and all kinds of like special effects, and then he got obsessed with somebody and started doing rape pictures, and like, holy shit.
Yeah. Okay. Nope.
Yeah, okay, cool. So
What are your thoughts, experiences with the movie? This is my first time ever watching the movie. So.
I've seen it here and there, and it's similar to Halloween 3, and I've always tried to like it. But I can't quite... I can't say I hate it or I don't like it, but I also... I don't know. It doesn't hit me the same way other Hitchcock's films have hit me in the past.
All right.
So, the thing is, there are things that this film, I think, does really, really well. Like, the violence is fucking insane. Like, that shit hits hard.
Yeah.
Like, really goddamn
it's
hard.
It's terrifying.
But it just has that, like, that thing that I don't like with Hitchcock sometimes, where it's the first hour is one movie, and the second hour is a completely different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's a little too jarring in this one. Even though, like, you know, you do see birds, like, obviously, like, you know, coming in, like, oh, cool, there's a bird there. And, wow, they're just chilling. Like, mm-hmm. little hints there. But it's just a really, really steep fucking drop in
yeah.
with, like, murderous just droves yeah, of fucking birds.
Yeah.
That, I don't like, what do you call the main dude? What's his face? I forget.
Todd,
the one that all the women want.
Was it? I mean, there's only two women who are, like, really fighting over him, but.
What's his name?
Yeah. Rod Taylor.
Rod Taylor. Oh, Mitch. It's Mitch. Yeah.
The character's name is Mitch, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems, it's a little too posh for me, but then I realize it again, it's Hitchcock. So,
it's 60s. It's also. 60s, yeah. So it's just like, he's just like, I'm serious, I'm witty. And then she's just like, ooh.
Oh, socialite drama. Oh, fucking pecked in the face.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's not a bad movie. Again, I've seen it here and there. I just always have a hard time getting to that first hour. But then when the birds hit, I'm like, all right, cool. I got some bird action
going
on.
That's so funny. I actually really enjoyed the first half. Or the
really?
First hour, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just thought it was just like, I don't know, whimsical and, like, dated, but, like, in a fun way. Like, I was, like, within the first hour, I was just like, okay, this is not as bad as I was expecting it to be. Because, I don't know, I think a lot of it had to do with Melanie as a character, because
she was good.
I was expecting, like, a very droll, boring, like, I was expecting Marion Crane. Let's let's be honest.
No agency, any agency is bad agency.
Yeah, no.
No, she kind of has her shit together.
Yeah, I was expecting, like, a Marion Crane type, mm-hmm. you know? But she has, like, you know, she's this, like, rich socialite, she's very witty, she takes no shit.
She's very witty. Like, she's super witty.
Yeah.
I just don't like anyone else. You know what? The ex-girlfriend, too.
Yeah, she's my favorite.
She's cool. I can dig her.
I'll get into it. But, yeah, no, I was just like, no, she's great. But yeah, so for me, my kind of overall thoughts, I actually liked this movie far more than I thought I was going to.
Really?
Now, given the bar was on the floor.
That's true.
But like, you know, it's not really hard to rise to my expectations when I have very low expectations.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, I didn't know any of like the Hitchcock stuff going into it. So that kind of helped, and then I learned about it after I wrote it, so I was just like, well, fuck!
At least you got to enjoy the movie.
I know, it's true. But, yeah, I did feel bad for, like, the actors, because I was just like, you guys are, like... Because I knew they were mats, so I knew they were mm-hmm. pretending to be attacked by birds while, like, the birds actually attacking was added in post.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun, because I was just like, I know you guys aren't, like, actually getting attacked by birds.
Right? Didn't they use, like, a really high-frequency sound or something? Like,
I have no idea.
Yeah, there was a video I was watching where the... Because Hitchcock was... Oh, it was an interview with Hitchcock. He was saying, like, yeah, I can't... I had to do something to let them know that the birds were approaching, so he just did a really loud sound that he had recorded and would just, like... terrify the actors.
I think it made it into the film because the high-pitched like sound effects
annoying as fuck. Again, I had to turn my volume down a couple times because they just kept squawking.
Yeah,
it was like real asshole birds.
Yeah. But no, I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to, which is great. Mm-hmm. And then I mean most of the characters were fine, like really it was fine.
Yeah.
I really liked, like, the whimsical, like, set design. I really liked this, like, Sleepy Town.
Sleepy Town, it nailed the Sleepy Town vibe so well.
So well. And I just thought that was really cool because I was just like, oh. Because, like, you know, I'm not from coastal Northern California, but I'm from inland Northern California. Mm-hmm. So, like, anytime we would go to those, like, kind of places like Bodega Bay, like, I was just like, oh, this is wonderful.
It's a little quaint treat, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. I like how we're both from inland parts of California. Mm-hmm. I'm just inland SoCal. But then you went to school in SoCal.
But, and then I went to and then I lived in Central California.
Man.
So I lived in inland middle of California. You were also just
California is California, damn.
I have been all over. Damn. So I've lived in most of the major spots of California, so.
We are a very Californian podcast. you can't tell by our accents, basically. No. Yeah.
So, this is our second Hitchcock film we've covered. How does it compare to Psycho? And do you notice a distinct Hitchcockian style to both films?
Yes. It does. It's totally, like, Hitchcock 101.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of just the way it's edited.
Yeah, the editing, the coloring, the style, like, mm-hmm. a lot of that really, I was just like, okay. Well, again, I don't have a lot of experience with Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. So, Before we started this podcast, I had only seen Rope and Vertigo.
Rear Window?
Nope.
Oh, Rear Window's good.
I've never seen Rear Window.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this is my first time watching The Birds, and then for Psycho, it was my first time watching Psycho all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I have a little bit more of a grasp onto what his style is like,
yeah,
you can definitely see, especially because this is one of like his like last big horror film.
Yeah, he's definitely honed his skill by this
he's
point.
Honed it in on mm-hmm. what is terrifying and how to make people uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, he knows rapid violence. Like, mm-hmm. It used to be a lot more pointed, I think, back in the day, especially with Vertigo, where it's a lot less, like, frantic.
Mm-hmm.
But with The Birds, I mean, I can kind of see where that one reviewer, like, kind of, like, was nostalgic for old Hitchcock, and he's like, what's this new, like, modern blockbuster Hitchcock? Blah. But, like, he kind of pioneered how to do that well.
Yeah.
Like, he really, really did a good job there. Because, again, his films are large in scale. But the violence itself was very Hitchcockian. Like, very Hitchcockian.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, it's surprisingly bloody for a 60s movie.
Oh, you know what? Like, it was bloody to the point where I felt like if he used this palette in the original Psycho, it would still be just as effective.
Yeah.
Like, that same, like, way he does, like, mise-en-scene and, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, color. Like, it... If he did that for Psycho, I think it would still have the same effect. It would be terrifying. Because, yeah, like, it being bright blood and, like, open lighting and, like, all this shit. It made it feel so much worse.
Yeah, Vertigo and Rope are both in color.
Mm-hmm.
So, Psycho's the only one.
Yeah.
I didn't have color in it. But this, because this one's in color, too. So, it all works out. But, yeah, he's able to be terrifying in black and white and in color, so mm-hmm. that's really cool.
It did make me want to see Psycho in color now, though. But not the Gus Van Sant version.
No, the shot-for-shot remake.
We're not doing that. Again, listeners, one day we're going to do a Gus Van Sant-style remake of our first episode, and you'll love it.
It'll be so much better, we promise.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
I know. Hey, at least it's not the one with the most Linsons anymore. For that, listen to Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. Yeah, you fuckers.
June.
Anyways.
I can't believe Scooby-Doo is our most popular episode. We put in so much work. Although, I did bust my ass for that episode.
That was a good episode.
I did write that one.
And we got to talk about 90 shit. It was fucking great.
I did get to talk about that. So that was awesome.
Yes. I like it.
Thank you.
So, what aesthetically or stylistically about this movie is so scary? Yes, the birds attacking are scary in theory, but in a post-The Bird society where we live in, you know, like a special effects time right now with Michael Bay and shit, people are scared of birds because, I don't know, like, what makes this, like, how do you feel about these special effects here?
Well, the special effects, I think, is so cool because, like, you have, like, the mat, like, mm-hmm. I personally... Again, I have nothing to compare it to, so I don't know what, like, good 60s, what 60s in general, like, special effects look like,
mm-hmm.
whether they're Hitchcockian or not. So I thought the birds, like, the mat and, like, just the overlay was really cool. Like, I thought it was mm-hmm. an interesting, effect. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't, like, you could tell that they were fake.
Yeah, you can tell
like, you could
fake.
Tell that they weren't really there, but I think at the time, you probably couldn't tell as easily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think now, you know, it's like the difference between telling what a good Photoshop job is in the 90s versus now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they're the quality and, like, the standards have kind of gone up significantly.
No more Comic Sans, no.
No.
No, definitely not.
But you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the bar has been raised exponentially since the 60s that, mm-hmm. like, special effects, like, they could have, you know. You expect something different in 2019 than you would in the 60s.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, there are definitely moments where the birds, even though the special effects are again, unfortunately lacking compared to what we're used to. Because of the way he shoots his scenes, and he shoots violence, and he shoots special effects, clearly, with these studios, like, it still can be terrifying because the birds are a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's definitely, like, when they're walking out and they're all just chilling, I'm like, oh, fuck. Fuck that.
Yeah.
And, like, just, you know, little pauses like that, and then when the birds, were coming through the chimney. Like, that one, shit like that.
Well, that scene in particular, and I want to kind of talk about that, is that scene was the most, like, 2019 style.
Yes, it was.
Because she stops, she looks at the chimney, she sees the bird, she looks to Mitch, and she's like, Mitch, we need to get out. And then,
fucking droves of these motherfuckers.
And I thought that was so cool. Like, that was such a awesome, like... I don't know, like, it felt very modern.
It felt very, yeah, like, very contemporary. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That. And I thought that was really, really cool, because, like, seeing that moment actually freaked me out, and I think that's part of the reason that it's so effective, is that it did have such a contemporary element to it.
Yeah.
That the rest of the movie and a lot of Hitchcock's other films kind of don't have, because if you're shooting from a 60s perspective, by now you anticipate the stylistic forms that were being used at the time. Like, you can tell what's coming in a horror film from the 60s.
It's not as pointed. And then again, also, like, I think that scene in particular, you've already established by this point that these birds are a threat in packs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been very established, and like, to know that they're going to come into their safe space, I think makes it a lot more effective. But that again, that's good filmmaking right there. Also, another aside here. Another film with violence towards children.
None of them die.
No?
One of them was severely injured and sent to the hospital, but none of them died.
Did that little boy not die when he fell down and the birds were just ganging up on him?
They shoot him away.
Okay. Because I was like, did we really cover another one? Where these kids are getting murked?
Child terror, yes.
Yeah, big time child terror. Jeez.
Lots of child terror, and then let's see here, also, just a random thought that kept occurring to me throughout the movie that I was like, what is going on here? Mitch and Kathy, the sister, what's with the age difference? Why?
It's a big difference, huh?
He's like a fucking full-fledged adult. He's a lawyer.
Dude, she's like
12.
Yeah, he's about to marry himself off to, like, people and, like, trying to get his life together. And she's like, was she, like, the last of the mothers, like, okay, like, I'm going into menopause. I need to get one more of these babies out.
I guess. I have no idea. But, like...
Yeah, that was a big difference.
Age difference, like, make it make sense.
But, like, you could, like, multiply her age by, like, 3 and still have some years left before...
Yeah, she was, like, 12.
Yeah.
And, like, he was in at least 30.
Yeah, I feel like he was closer to 40, to be honest with you. Like, damn.
I mean, his face, yes. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, like, the character, like, they probably were aiming for, like, mid-30s.
Yeah, but, you know, older Hitchcock.
early to mid-30s, I think. But, like, what in the shit?
Yeah, there's the interpersonal drama in this film is very strange. Like, it's old world, but then it's also, like, I don't know. Like, there's some weird contemporary aspect to it.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's also the whole drama where Lydia's a frigid bitch for no reason.
Which one's Lydia?
The mom.
The mom, right? Yeah.
Where she is just stone cold and she looks mysterious the whole movie, and I kept waiting for them to explore that. I kept waiting for there to be something to, like, going on between, like, where Lydia was just like, oh, like, I don't know. Like, I was waiting for that.
Yeah, and something happens to my youth, and I'm always like this now. Boo.
or not even that, where, like, she has some, like, dark nefarious secret where she knows where the birds are attacking. Because she had that vibe. She gave up that vibe the entire movie.
She was like... socialite Fred Gwynn.
I don't even know, man. I don't even know. Yeah. But yeah, so the interpersonal drama is also a very interesting tidbit of this movie that I'm not sure if it helps or hinders.
Well, I don't know. Because
parts of it just felt like it added the extra 30 minutes that didn't need to be there for the movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then also, I would think the only interpersonal drama that I think is kind of okay was maybe anytime Annie was on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was cool. Yeah, she was cool. Yeah,
and like, but like her death, I was like, oh, shit.
I was pissed.
Yeah, dude, just like, this is like off screen, right? They just find her. And she's just, like, face down while the sister's, like, inside the home.
No, she's face up. They just face up. They don't show her face. Like, they kind of, like, it's very obvious that she's been picked apart.
Yep.
But, I was like, okay, if you're going to show that other guy with his eyeballs plucked out, show me hers. Yeah. Like, come on now. That would have been way more impactful.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. But, like, she's the only one that I feel like, I mean, she was, she just got the shit end of the stick.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, she totally did. She's like, yeah, I guess my man's being stolen. And, like,
yeah. Well, they're, Annie and Melanie's, like, weird friendship.
Yeah.
I really liked. Like, I thought that was really fun.
Like, it was like a little game. Like,
yeah, it was weird. A little game, but, like, they were still, like, friendly with each other. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, what is going on? And it, I don't know, that just, and then, of course, like, they're both super, like, quick as a whip, both of them.
Yes.
Like, they're both super witty, so it was just, like, a battle
of wills. Like, he obviously has a type.
Like, it's, like, this whole battle of wills thing, and I was just like, this is the coolest. Like, that was probably one, like, the scenes where Melanie and Annie were interacting were probably my favorites in the movie.
Maybe just get rid of the mom. Yeah. And cut those scenes out, and then have it, you know, Annie versus Melanie trying to get this man,
which is so
and
funny,
not die alone.
I never viewed it as a Annie versus Melanie type of thing.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't know.
So, I didn't. I mean, that's just not how I interpreted it, but, you know.
Yeah, I guess because, like, Melanie's, like, the new kid on the block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Annie's just kind of, like, dubious, but also she, you know, she seems kind of clear on the, you know, he's, like, it's a friendship that I want to continue,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, you know, so I just think that's interesting.
I think maybe because she seems to initially play her card so close to the chest
that
it seems a little more, yeah.
A little more mysterious, or that she's, like, the jealous type, but she really doesn't end up being that way,
I think, in my opinion. Yeah, she reveals herself to be a lot more, like, a good person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, and then she dies. And then she fucking dies.
Which goes on to my next question. Thoughts on how Hitchcock treats women in his films?
Not great.
No.
Not great. Like, I'm gonna honestly, like, this one I feel like you're just punishing women, basically, at this point.
Yeah. So we're thinking, like, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, Vertigo. Fucking Vertigo.
Again, I'm not a fan of that movie.
No.
I'm just not.
No, I'm not.
I know it's like a filmically significant film, but, like,
who gives a shit?
Exactly.
And then Rope, there's, like, no women at all, because it's, like, a super homoerotic movie, but that's for another day.
Yeah.
Rear
Window, I think, the main lady gets a lot of, she actually is probably the one with the most agency and treated pretty well. But she still is, like, she feels like a prize almost for, like, the Jimmy Stewart character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's she's still not quite, like, up there with him, you know? It's weird.
And then we have, of course, Miss Marion Crane.
Yeah, who just gets taken out.
Yeah, she gets marked pretty early in the movie anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Although Lila Crane's a good character. Lila Crane, sister,
she's
like stone cold.
Yeah.
She, like, gets shit done, you know?
Yeah, but also, like, then she's kind of coded to be a bitch.
Yeah,
like, an assertive bitch.
They don't give her a lot of,
redemption.
Yeah, redemptive qualities, I guess.
No.
Yeah, Hitchcock's pretty cut and dry with his ladies, huh?
No, yeah, he treats women like shit in his movies. Like, a lot of them die, or a lot of them just have, like, this, I mean, even for the 60s, like,
mm-hmm.
really droll personalities, and I'm like, okay.
Well, the ones that show personality and, like make strides or, like, reveal themselves to be, like, you know, like something goes up for them.
Yeah.
They get it the worst out of everybody. Fucking main character. What's her name? I forgot
her name. Melanie.
Melanie. I knew it was Melanie. Like, her tattered at the end and, like, just trying
She's
to get,
like,
to the car.
She is, like, freaking out. She's clearly had, like, some kind of psychological break.
Exactly. It's just, yeah, it's weird. He's, I don't know. Like, yeah, he doesn't really seem to, he's just not very respectful, I don't think.
No.
When it comes to his female characters.
No. And by the end of it, like, they're straight up just, like, I don't know, ready to take her to the hospital and, what, leave her there? I have no idea. Because what is there to do? Like, she's clearly had some kind of psychological break.
Well, it also doesn't help, I feel like, that most of the male characters in all of his films, even this one where the male character is not, like, a main actor,
mm-hmm.
is, like, they always have the triumph. They get the triumph. Like, no matter what, they get the triumph. Even fucking that dumbass guy that was helping Lila Crane in Psycho. Like, he still managed to take out Norman Bates, you know? So it's, like, I don't know. He's a little sexist. It's a little bit.
Just a bit.
Just a smidge of sexism in there.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was kind of worth noting. But what do you like most about The Birds and where did it fall short? This will be fun for you because I liked it. You didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I liked any scene where the birds were like not necessarily attacking, but they were like where people were walking among the birds and birds were staring them down. Like, that level of suspense never really went away.
Yeah, that's true.
And I also recognize that it's been parodied in, like, a lot of stuff, especially The Simpsons, so it's nice to see it from the source.
Yeah.
You know?
Or noticing, like, when, like, the birds are starting to, like, gather on, like, the playground when Melanie's waiting outside.
Oh, my God, that was a good scene.
That was really cool. And again, you can kind of tell, like, based on where she's sitting, that something's going to start, like, going down
behind
her. She's
gonna pop off, yeah.
Yeah, because she's sitting, like, to, like, the right of the frame anyway. So I'm like, okay, well, we have all this space on the left. Clearly there's something going on.
Oh, camera movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, cinematography in this film is, again, it's top-notch Hitchcock. Like, he's clearly... Even Psycho was, like, some of the best pointed camera work that I feel like I've seen in a film.
Yeah, that was one of the things that also... I didn't get... put in here, but the use of like POV shots and like how like a lot of like during conversations you'd be making like eye contact with Melanie even though she was like talking to like a character, like that kind of stuff, like I thought that was really cool. Because the whole point was it was designed to help you relate to Melanie more and so feel more sympathy and, you know, anxiety over her dire situation.
Yes, and then when shit starts hitting the fan for her, it feels so much worse. So much worse. And then last thing I really liked about this film, Bodega Bay. The way they portrayed it and the environment and the blue and it just, I don't know, it's nice. I really, really dig it.
Yeah.
Pacing I think is bad. It's just not good. It's 2 hours, and it really should be like less than that for basically the end result is.
Yeah,
you don't need that much build up. I mean, it did give us a very, very effective death with Annie, but that's about it. Obviously, our stupid ass millennial mindsets, man. The special effects are hard. They're sometimes a little hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm a little bit like, oh, fuck.
There's
too much of an outline on that goddamn bird.
Yeah. There's certain moments that take me out of it, and that's part of the reason why I think I like the first hour so much.
You don't have those, yeah.
Is you don't have like the effects to take you out of the movie, and you're really invested in the story.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, and then also, actually, this movie does have some super iconic ass scenes that you just can't deny how good they are. Yeah. The telephone booth,
of course.
Yeah, walking out and having all the birds perched everywhere, playground, like this kind of stuff is known. And it's known for a reason. It's done very effectively.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's what I appreciate.
Or the aerial shot where you see Bodega Bay on fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's a good fucking shot.
You just see seagulls, like, flapping around.
You missed your hand motion right now, but it was like flap. It was just weird.
It matched.
It matched bird motions.
But for me, I think, yeah, pacing is one of the things that it fell short on for me. And then, honestly, it's so hard for me sometimes to get into older movies. Like, I talk about this just because, I don't know, just how I was raised. I didn't watch old movies growing up, so I didn't have the chance to really acclimate to them. So it's always really hard for me to, like, force myself to watch older movies, which is funny because I was the one who put this on the list.
I know. But I don't think we expected, like, the darkness of Hitchcock's
ending to
permeate the episode.
No, I wasn't expecting that at all. But, I think that, this movie, I liked the characters. Like, there wasn't any character in particular where I dreaded, like, a scene with them, you know? Sure, some of them I thought was just like, okay, let's roll our eyes a little bit.
They're a little drab sometimes.
Yeah. But other than that, like, I mean, you're going to get that in most movies where there's a little bit of drabness for the sake of the plot.
But I feel like Melly and Annie's scenes were enough to counteract it for the most part.
Yeah, I agree. They were
just good together.
I agree. And that you get a lot of, like, chemistry.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of chemistry there, and I really like I really appreciated that, because, like, a lot of, like, there were, like, sparks, you know?
Yes, there was.
You know? Versus other scenes in the movie where I was just, like, it was boring. You know? Like, yeah. Lydia and Melanie, like, their scenes where, like, after Lydia finds her friend whose eyes have been gouged out, and she drives back, and she's just, like, having a panic attack.
I feel like every time Mitch was on screen, it was like watching a ham sandwich recite lines. Like, there was something about him I didn't like.
Really?
He was just boring. I'm like,
he was fine.
I'm like, everybody wants his dick.
Also, I was just like, you're not particularly handsome.
He's just, he's just like, I'm the only lawyer in Bodega Bay. Like, that's essentially it. He's like socialite gold for people who haven't been picked off yet.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he's also kind of like... he's also a bit of a smartass, so I thought that's kind of the one of the other redeeming qualities. I just had more questions about, like, what was going on, because, like, literally he has an apartment that he spends his week at in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then he spends his weekends in Bodega Bay. The whole time I was like, secret family.
Yeah,
secret family,
exactly. Secret family. He does not seem like a great guy.
Like, I'm like, where's the secret family? You know? Like, yeah. That's what I was expecting. Like, and that's what I wanted in the first hour, and I didn't get it, so I had to deal with these birds for the rest of it.
Right? Well, see, and the other thing, too, like, he doesn't really feel like he earns his hero, like, status.
No.
At all. Like, he's, like, saving people and doing all this shit, but
he's
like,
only saving people until their eyes are about to get pecked out.
Yeah, but it's weird, though, because they give him these victory moments, and I'm just like... Really? Him? Like, of Howard character? Is it just because he's, like, the dude?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like default he's the dude. Yeah. So he's got to be, like, the one to, like, swat him away and get somebody from point A to point B.
Yeah, he's the only man in the principal cast, so that would make sense.
Yeah, good old, you know, Hitchcock still can't give the women the agency, you know? Yeah.
Okay, kind of wrapping it up. We kind of talked about it, but who was your favorite character and why?
Probably Annie.
Yeah, Annie was my favorite character.
Annie
too.
She was pretty cool.
I was so pissed when she got killed. I wanted her to make it to the end.
Yeah.
So bad.
Because she was, again, she's a scene stealer. She definitely is. And then she also, her scenes, I feel like, for the drama, provides a pretty good context.
I agree.
Which is why you can only use her own scenes. Can we go worst character?
Oh, yeah, sure.
The mom.
Okay, we're in agreement. Yeah. Which is so funny.
She just drugged the movie down.
I bet you we're going to agree on our rating.
Okay.
Also.
All right. Fuck it. Let's go. So let's both establish those are our characters right there. Okay, cool. Special mention for any child that got fucking taken out.
Yeah, right.
Just keeps happening. We swear we'll stop, guys.
We'll stop with the child death.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know what's going to be in the next one.
What's next week?
No children in next week's movie.
Okay.
We're good. Everybody, you get a break. Maybe a couple movies after that, though. We'll see. Anyways, ranking.
You say, I don't know, like, we don't have, like, through March plan.
I know. my gosh. We got some big ones, though. That's why.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure I'll mention it at the end of the episode, but.
Yeah, we got a slate for you. Anyways, ranking out of 5 brandy glasses.
There was so much drinking.
There's a lot of drinking. It's 60s Hitchcock, dude.
Like, there is so much alcohol in this movie. I was just like, I feel like I need to be, like, sipping an old-fashioned or something.
I was drinking whiskey while watching this last night.
Oh, my
God. I was. It felt right.
It didn't feel right.
But then I fell asleep because I had too much.
Whiskey.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll give my ranking right now.
Okay.
2.
Wow.
2
okay.
brandy glasses.
Two brandy glasses.
I will give it 2 for the significance of the film and certain scenes.
Wow, you really did not like this movie.
Yeah. But in terms of my enjoyment, 2's the most you're going to get.
Wow. That is wild. Okay. I guess they're not going to be the same. I'm going to give this a 3.
A 3? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I liked it. It didn't particularly blow my mind. It was really hard to keep my attention for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at other things.
Yeah. Like, I was trying not to.
I was.
You know what this movie did? It actually, so what happened is that I would stay watching. And then, like, okay, when's something gonna happen? And then check my phone, and something happens for, like, a minute. And I'm like, ah, fuck. Yeah, I missed bird
that,
shit.
That happened to me a couple times, too.
Yeah.
Or I would space out. Like, I literally, there was a couple times where I just zoned out. And, like, the movie was, like, background noise to a point where I was just like, what? And then all of a sudden, you'd hear this, like, loud as shit screeching noise. And I would just be like, what's going on? What did I miss?
There were at least 2 instances where I had to go back a minute or two and be like, okay, that's what I thought would happen, but I didn't... you know, computer visually.
Yeah. So. And then I had to go back for the very ending to see if there was a title card, and there wasn't. And then, because I was like, again, I was spacing out at the end, like literally the end of the movie, I was still spacing out. And then it was just like, it cut to like black, and I was like, is that the fucking movie? And I had to go back and watch the last, like, minute again, so...
Oh, that's hilarious.
It'd be like that.
What I ended up doing was having to go to the bathroom at the last 3 minutes. But I didn't know it was the last 3 minutes, so I paused it, and I'm like, actually, it's almost over. I can watch it out and then go to the bathroom. So I was pretty intently focused on the last 3 minutes, because I was like, come on, wrap up, so I can go take a piss.
But, and yeah. Then it ended, and you were like, freedom!
Yeah, well, it ended good, though, so I was still like, huh, okay. All right, cool, bleak and fucked up.
Yeah.
Kind of my shit, so there you go.
I mean, that's true, it's not awful.
Yeah.
But, yeah, any other final notes other than you didn't like it?
I wouldn't recommend this for anybody looking for, like, Hitchcock fundamentals. Like, it's really good.
Really?
I think it's more of a relic than a lot of his other movies.
Hmm.
Even though it's more contemporary and a little later on.
Yeah.
But, like, a movie like Rear Window is so much better than this. Like, it's not even comparable.
I'm excited to do Rear Window, because I know that that one also had a couple remakes.
Yeah, well, yeah, that one's Disturbia, I think, was their take on Rear Window.
Yes, Disturbia was, yes.
Which, Disturbia's awesome. I fucking love Disturbia.
Disturbia is so fun. It's so
dumb. That's a good movie. It's dumb as shit.
It's so dumb.
And it's like Shia LaBeouf before he's chasing Transformers, but it's goddamn good.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
And Carrie Ann Moss in there. And again, it's based heavily off Rear Window, which is a fucking fantastic movie with Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, see how much more excited I am talking about a non-Birds Hitchcock movie?
You are. You just lit up.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, again, as my last thoughts, like, this is probably, like, the most 50-50 you'll see of, like, old Hollywood and new Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, this is right down the middle,
mm-hmm.
where I feel like it doesn't quite play as organically as something like Psycho, which is a very new Hollywood feeling, mm-hmm. like, for the most part. And Rear Window... which has the mystery element to a T just down.
Gotcha.
Like, down well. To it actually contemporizes it while still having this kind of style, you know? This, the mystery kind of goes nowhere, which I think kind of kills the movie a little bit.
I agree. There's no, like, real resolution other than... Well, it's so focused heavily on the characters.
Yeah.
So when the characters get away, like, that's supposed to give us, like, enough, like... sigh of relief that mm-hmm. like but then like the birds are still there, like, yeah. What's gonna happen?
And there's only two characters I really liked, so, you know, yeah. Like,
it's true.
Yeah. How about you, any final thoughts regarding the birds?
No, I mean, I thought it was fine. Like, yeah. I thought it was just a fine Hitchcock movie. Like, again, I'm just not, even before all of this drama, mm-hmm. I wasn't a huge Hitchcock fan anyway, like, mm-hmm. I don't put old white directors on pedestals just because everyone else does.
But they're the only directors we had.
And I know. No, and I get that. And, like, I respect that.
No, I know. I'm just messing. Like, they were default by means of the system not allowing others.
Exactly.
To be honest with you.
But,
yeah.
Like, I just because, like, everyone says he's a, you know, he's a genius. He's the master mm-hmm. of horror, whatever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like,
yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm going to agree with that sentence.
Yeah.
So
you don't have to.
And I am reserving judgment until I see a couple more of his movies. But, I mean, what I have seen, I haven't disliked. Like, I did,
yeah.
Like, I did like the birds. Like, I don't want to completely shit on the movie when I say that I, you know, with, like, the critiques. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it. Like,
yeah,
it was,
it's very flawed, though. It's just
yeah,
very flawed.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's a flawed movie. But, like, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of movies that we cover that I'm like, I fucking love this movie are
yeah.
flawed.
But, you know what? I think the flaws here are, like... result in boredom.
It's
which
true.
I think is
no,
bad.
That's true.
That's bad.
Like, I'll defend Silence of the Lambs to the death.
Yeah.
But, like, no one can tell me it's a boring movie.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
So,
yes.
I think...
Wait, one more question, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I got one.
Yeah, please.
I got one. Okay. So, this is actually a pretty big deal, but knowing now that how Hitchcock's career ended and his association with the main actress here, how do you... Does that change how you looked at Hitchcock prior to doing the research for this episode? Does that affect, like, your legacy view of him, basically?
Yes.
It does for me.
Yeah.
Like, it actually really does.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where I'm kind of annoyed now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Is I learned about this about halfway through watching The Birds, because I was reading about The Birds while I was watching
man.
The Birds.
Oh,
so
no.
The first half, maybe that's why I like the first hour so
maybe.
Much.
Maybe.
Because then by the second half, I was just
this
angry.
Piece of shit.
Yeah. Maybe, actually, now that I think about it, that could actually very well be it.
Well, it's like, to me, it shows, kind of a a divaness and like a sadist mix towards the end of his life, which I feel like, I know he's like a dark person because of what he's done prior leading up to the end of his, to this point in his career, but like to have it so out in the open,
definitely
it really just tempers like kind of my overall view, unfortunately. Really? Yeah, I don't know. But then again, I just learned this information now, so we'll see how I can...
It digests,
yeah.
I think what he... Like, this quote where basically it was saying that Alfred Hitchcock had such a, like, deep, like, deep-rooted, like, issues and, like, mm-hmm. weird... I don't know. Basically, the only way he could manifest his own weirdness was through film. And mm-hmm. I guess a lot of that also manifested into real life when he decided to be a fucking creepazoid.
Okay, so he's 1960s Lars von Trier. Gotcha.
Yeah, he had a lot of... Well, I mean, he had a lot of darkness in him anyway that... Or at least that's what, you know, what I saw.
I mean, they're mind-flawed creators, but I feel like... When you get to this almost sadist level towards the end right there, it seems like a mind that knows, a life that knows it's going to go, and instead of, like, contributing, starts just doing all the worst impulses towards the end there, which I don't like.
I really want to watch The Girl and kind of see the, mm-hmm. the documentary about...
I want to see it too. Yeah. Fuck it.
About Tippi Hedren. Mm-hmm. But I think that the... Yeah, I think that... gave me a lot to think about while watching the movie, and mm-hmm. it mainly just made me feel bad for Tippi.
It did. Yeah. But then again, I mean, have you ever listened to that one podcast? It's about old Hollywood, and it goes, I'll have to link it to you. I forget what it, Remember This? Something like that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll show, it's actually done really, really well. Oh, but cool. they cover a lot of stuff about old Hollywood that, I mean, God, dude, women in old Hollywood just got the short end of the fucking stick.
Definitely.
I mean, they do now, obviously.
Right.
But it was brazen back then. Like, there was no, like, trying to cover for PR or anything. They were like, nobody gives a fuck anyways. Like, and to come off from that era and then, like, go into the 70s after how the world had been changing from the 60s and still kind of, like, stick mm-hmm. to that. It's a little icky.
Definitely.
It's just a little icky.
Yeah. No, I can see that. So, I mean, there's a lot to digest with this particular episode. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping in the future, if when we cover other Hitchcock films, it'll kind of give me, like, the framework of him being, like, obviously a flawed creator.
Yes.
That's another thing. It's just, like, don't put your fucking heroes on pedestals.
Don't do it. You're right. You're right.
Like, don't, like, I understand that there are so many people who are probably, like, so, like, angry because I'm just, like, it affects my viewpoint of Alfred Hitchcock, but that's only because, like, I haven't spent my whole life idolizing him.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
If, like, someone who I, you know, completely love and cherish in the film industry, for example, Jeff Goldblum broke my fucking heart this week.
Did he? Why?
He basically, he's a Woody Allen sympathizer. He's like, he deserves due process and I would work with him again. And I'm like,
no.
Yeah. So, like, don't put your heroes on pedestals.
Nobody interview Martin Scorsese. Just let him live on as the legacy that he has right now, please.
Yeah, they'll fuck you over, break your heart. They'll, you know.
Yeah.
It sucks. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the moral of it, is where it's just like, you don't want that, you know, you don't want to put people on such high pedestals like that, because then shit comes out like this.
Exactly.
Or, you know, you learn stuff, and like, the fact that this whole stuff about Alfred Hitchcock is not more well known mm-hmm. kind of goes to show that his legacy overshadowed any wrongdoing.
Exactly.
And I think that sucks.
And when I think of when you idolize too, you're committing to something so strongly. Like, it's very easy to idolize.
You're committing
to it.
And you're committing to an ideal. Like,
yes.
No one's perfect.
Exactly. But, to commit so easily and that intensely, like, it's easy to do because he has such an icon. But when shit like this is revealed, it you know, it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah.
It really is hard to reconfigure your mindset when that information comes in. If you spent so much time, like, pedestaling this motherfucker. Absolutely. Well, dark episode, huh?
Sometimes
it'd be like that. All right. But next week's episode is a lot more campy.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
What are we doing next week, Anthony?
We're going to bleep it out.
Oh, yeah!
Yes. So, yeah, it's actually like, it's another sequel, which I think you guys will love. And it's way different. It's way, way different. It's not Hitchcockian at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, this will be fun. I'm very excited because I've seen the first one and I've seen the third one. I haven't seen part two, the second one.
I think two might be my favorite of the three.
Which is, I'm very excited now because the third, between the first one and the third one, I actually like the third one. A ton.
Okay, so you like Lemmer 2 because it's like a solid in-between for both. So you get a lot of the horror, and then you get a lot of the camp.
This is quickly becoming my favorite campy horror franchise.
Nice!
Because, like, so far I haven't seen a movie where I'm just like, you know?
You'll love the TV show, trust me.
Oh, I'm so excited.
You would love it. It's on Netflix. Anyways, we might have given it away right there, but whatever.
I can cut this out. But anyway, so I'm very excited for next week. It is so much more lighthearted than this week.
It's significantly more.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your love on The Witch. We're glad you liked it as much as we like talking about it.
That was a fun one.
It was very
fun.
That was
very the opposite of right now.
Very much the opposite of right now. And I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up for the week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please write us a review and rate us on iTunes. It totally means the world to us. We've gotten a couple more hits lately, and that is totally awesome. Thank you so much for all your love and support and good words of support. And
yes.
It really makes us happy. Because then I text Anthony in a glee. And I'm just like, hey, we have a new review.
And I'm like, hey, enthusiasm, what? Oh, man.
So go ahead and do that. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of everything going on in the podcast, you can follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE, People's Podcast. You can also like our Facebook page at Horror People Pod as well. We're starting to get some more likes on that.
Yeah, we got to actually push that one.
So
yeah.
That's actually pretty exciting. So you can follow us on all of those platforms. On Facebook, I usually will share like horror articles or cool stuff that I find that are horror related.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of more casual, but you know, you can check us out there as well. If you have a podcast, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, I have a podcast, I want to work with these guys. We're totally in the market for promo exchanges and everything like that. So if you want your promo to be aired at the beginning of the show, go ahead and send us an email at horriblepeoplespodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram.
God, you're so good at that. What the hell would I do without you? This is horrible. Oh.
If you want to follow Anthony and all,
yeah,
and see his
LA adventures,
his LA adventures is exactly what I was gonna say. You can follow him. He is on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then if you want to follow my Orange County adventures, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
That's right.
And I think that's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. We will catch you next week. Until then. Have fun and be safe, horror bees.
Peace out, fuckers.
Bye, guys.